right, welcome to the Michael Slate Show. I'm your host, Michael Slate. And I'm talking fast today because we got a packed show. We got a really great show, and it's a show that I do believe is going to be commensurate with the times. At the back end of the show, we're going to be playing a track featuring Bob Avakian and Cornel West called Is There Value to Voting? Can Voting Stop Fascism? It's an excerpt from Revolution and Religion, The Fight for Emancipation, and the Role of Religion, a dialogue between Cornel West and Bob Avakian. So stay tuned for that. You don't want to miss that big question of the day, okay? Before that, we'll be talking with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party and a frequent guest on the show. And we're going to be talking about what's happened, this whole horrendous carnival that's been going on, this assault on humanity that started out with the Republican National Convention and has continued with the Democratic National Convention. And in many ways, as we're seeing, there's a lot of contestation between the Republicans and the Democrats, but there is also quite a bit in common. And we'll be talking with Carl about that, about what they offer us and what humanity needs and what it says about the future and about the two different futures being posed. So that's going to be a very interesting, very hot subject. And opening the show up, I'm really pleased to welcome back to the show Joey Johnson. Joey Johnson, listeners might know from a couple weeks ago, we had him on the show and we introduced him as the notorious flag burner who won the Supreme Court case Texas versus Johnson after he burned the American flag outside of the Dallas Republican National Convention in 1984. And Joey is back. And he also succeeded in burning the American flag outside the Republican National Convention in Cleveland this week and was attacked and arrested by the police. He's out of jail now, and I'm really happy to be welcoming him to the show. Joey, welcome, man.
Oh, thank you very much, Michael. I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, it's great hearing your voice. And it was even better watching as you were involved in that action. So why don't you tell people what happened the other day?
Well, very importantly, we thought we had to be here in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention, or outside of it, I should say, in the streets, denouncing it and exposing to the people in this country and to the world, you know, to take an internationalist stand, to stand against all the hideous display of American first chauvinism. And I mean, anyone who saw Trump's acceptance speech last night, it was really a mind Trump, fangs bared American chauvinism. And it was fascist in every dimension. And it was so important that we did what we did in terms of burning the flag, because the flag is the symbol of their empire. It's a symbol of an imperialist system, a U.S. imperialist system that's committed so many atrocities and invasions and occupations and war crimes and torture on just an unparalleled scale, you know, globally. And that's what the flag is a symbol of. And that's what Trump was glorying in. You know, it's no mistake that they have these flags as a backdrop. That's their unifying symbol. And however people personally feel about the flag, it is the flag of the system. It is the flag of the empire that's doing horrific things to people all over the planet. So for the same reasons that I burned it back in 1984 outside the Republican convention when Ronald Reagan was being renominated for his second term as commander-in-chief and was doing everything that he did in backing death squads in El Salvador and Guatemala and contra mercenaries and in Nicaragua and making jokes about starting a nuclear war against the Soviet Union. I mean, really, I'll tell you, Trump is like all of that on steroids. And his acceptance speech last night, I really challenge people to look at it objectively for what it really was. Now, don't turn away from it because it's so ugly or so disgusting to you. You can't do that. We have to confront reality. We have to confront reality of what's unfolding in this country. And it really is a system of capitalism and imperialism that's in crisis and facing real strains. And there's powerful sections of the ruling elite that want to put forward this fascist Trump. And I just want to be clear. I think both Trump and Clinton are criminal representatives of a criminal system. I think that Trump is an open fascist. I think that we could go on about that. And I think that Clinton is a proven war criminal who's just done horrific things to the people of the world. Going back to when Bill Clinton was president and she was not just along for the ride. I mean, give her due. You know, she was an active participant in the inner circles of the Bill Clinton regime, advocating for all the sanctions against the Iraqi people that caused over 500,000 people to die. The wars in the Middle East, every one of them since then, the whole crime of mass incarceration of black people in this country, blacks and Latinos. She was an active participant. I mean, people have called her on this, that she made statements that black youth were super predators that need to be brought to heel. I mean, that's disgusting. That's hideous. But these are the terms that the system tries to confine us in. These elections are not how we control the direction of society. They're how the system controls and gets us to legitimize by stepping into a voting booth and choosing between one of these oppressors who's going to carry out a horrific agenda, especially from the standpoint of the people of the world. And that's who we're acting on behalf of, the hopes and aspirations of the 7 billion of the planet. So we went in front of the Cleveland Convention Center and burned the Revolution Club went and did this together. And I went and did it as the Texas versus Johnson. That's who I am. I'm the defendant from the Supreme Court case. I'm the one who fought this through from 1984 to 1989 after my arrest in Dallas, Texas, when I was sentenced to a year in jail and a $2,000 fine. We appealed it, and I fought it for 5 years and made a very public legal and political battle out of it. And my lawyer was William Kunstler. I mean, people can go and learn about all of that, but the system has never relented from trying to force patriotism and force the flag on people and to get them to embrace and go along with the crimes of the empire. So I think it was really important that we were out here in Cleveland calling this out. Trump's theme of the last day of the convention was America first. But America has always been first in genocide and atrocities and invasions and torture. It's unparalleled, as I said earlier. So I'm glad we did this to stand with the people of the world. And I want people to know the framework I'm coming from is the framework of Bob Avakian, that we need to actually overthrow this system, that America was never great, and that we need to overthrow this system, not try to modify it or to reform it. That's absolutely unreasonable and not dealing with the full dimensions of what we're up against. And I see this thing about American lives being more important than other people's lives. There's a quote from Bob Avakian that says the exact opposite, that American lives are not more important than other people's lives, and that internationalism means the whole world comes first. To hell with this America first, you know, outlook. It's so degrading and so sickening. You know, we're talking about 7 billion people inhabit this planet, and to put one people in any country, especially in a peerless country that parasitically feeds off the people of the world, that forces Trump's whole tirade against immigrants. This system actually strangles the life out of people in places like Central America, a whole legacy of strangling the life out of people in Central America and Mexico and forcing them to make this perilous trek across the border or to send their children, hoping that their children will survive and get a better life in this country because of what this system has done to their homelands. You know, so this is a whole hideous future. So we have to stand with the people of the world against all of this. And there's another quote from Avakian where he says, people should stop thinking like Americans and start thinking about humanity. So that's the framework that I'm operating on. And Bob Avakian's brought forward a whole new vision for a new socialist republic in North America. And people got to find out about this at revcom.us. I'm not just an anti-Trump protester, an anti-Hillary, and Hillary Clinton protester or anti-fascist. It goes much deeper than this. So there's a vision and a strategy to get humanity beyond all this suffering unnecessarily going on in the world.
Now, Joey, we have just about 5 more minutes left, and I wanted to ask you this real quick because I think all the stuff that you're saying is extremely important, and including, you know, look, I think there's probably been a lot of people around the world who probably got a chance to see that or will get a chance to see that burning of that flag. Their hearts must have just leapt in great joy watching that, and especially hearing what you were saying at the time and what's been put out since then. And I think it's extremely important. I also wanted to ask you, though, one thing is that they hit you hard when that was on fire. I mean, there's actually, was it at least 17 people? I know if it was 17 or 18 people who were arrested.
I 17, as I understand it.
Okay, and it was...
I just got out of jail last night, right. So I'm trying to catch up with all the facts.
Right, exactly. And two people are facing felony charges. And it was sort of, the way they did this, they said, oh, you know, and I saw them arguing this. They were saying, oh, no, you know, Joey Johnson's, he was on fire. We were just trying to save him. We were trying to save him, trying to prevent a bigger catastrophe, all this other stuff. And actually, a lot of your lawyers, in fact, and a lot of other people have argued, and I saw it at the press conference yesterday with Sansara Taylor and Carl Dix talking about, that this was actually something that the rulers knew was going to be, and the police knew was going to be something that was going to be very incendiary in many ways, in both ways, you know, in people's hearts and minds. Yeah, and it was actually a preventive assault on you in a certain sense. Talk about that a little bit.
You know, the police chief of Cleveland said he was aware that flag burning was protected speech, but in this case, people were being injured, so we had to step in. It's just a bogus police pretext, you know, to carry out political suppression, and that's what we're dealing with, nothing else. And they were trying to suppress it, step in, and you can see that in the videos that have been uploaded onto the internet. There's a ton of people out there with cameras capturing it, and I don't think they like it when they come with this whole choreographed and scripted fascist event that people challenge, you know, and puncture that whole America uber alles, you know, narrative, and they don't like it, and so they're trying to intervene and suppress it, and they're trying to find a pretext to rationalize it. So it's outrageous, and so now we have a whole legal battle to fight around that. But I'm ready, and the Revolution Club is ready, and this is part of our internationalism. This is part of our standing with the people of the world, and we wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I felt more alive when that flag was burning than I have in a very long time. It's not a gimmick, man. It's like you got to challenge people ideologically about what has that flag actually presided over and what horrific things has this empire done to people around the world. And do we have to live this way? And I want to say to your listeners, there were hundreds of people in the streets of Cleveland, but really, it should have been like Tahrir Square in Egypt, you know, times 10. There need to be millions of people in the street. If you understand how serious this is, that it really is like fascism, and it's not going to go away because you look at your TV and make smug remarks about, you know, oh, look how ignorant those people are, or you throw your shoe at the TV. Okay, do that, but then put your shoes on and get out in the streets with us, because we need massive resistance to all these crimes of the empire, the police terror that's going on, the whole down-pressing climate against immigrants where they're supposed to just constantly be looking over their shoulders now. They're going to be rounded up and deported. The whole hatred of Muslims, everything. We all have to be fighting the power against these crimes and then vigorously struggling and debating amongst ourselves over what's it going to take to get humanity free of all this. Free! That's what we got to be talking about.
All right, Joey, you're going to be in Philadelphia?
Indeed.
Good. All right, man. Do you have anything you want to add before we switch over to Carl?
No, I just want to send my shout out to all the listeners and call on people to fight the power and transform the people for revolution.
All right, Joey. Thanks a lot, man. Talk to you again soon, I hope. All right?
I hope so.
All right. Take care, man. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm your host, Michael Slate, and we have just been talking with notorious American flag burner Joey Johnson. We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back to talk with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party and the Stop Mass Incarceration Network, so stay tuned. Welcome back. That was The Clash with I'm So Bored with the USA. All right. We're going to be talking with Carl Dix right now from the Revolutionary Communist Party. Carl, how are you?
I'm fine, Michael.
All right. Good, man. Let's jump into this because I want to pick your brain all the way through this. We've got a lot to talk about. you described, you talked about, when you were talking about what Joey Johnson did in terms of burning the flag, you made a comment that I thought that was really important. You said the flag being burned outside the Republican convention today came down to a collision between two drastically different futures for humanity. Joey started to speak about that. I wanted to hear what you had to say about it.
Yeah, see, I mean, people really need to get what's going on here, because it culminated last night in that speech that Donald Trump gave that I said was a mixture of Adolf Hitler and Duck Dynasty. You had this guy, it was like rallying a lynch mob to unleash on the people of the world. That's what it came down to. It was a call to all the white supremacists, all the America number one chauvinists, all the women haters, all the immigrant bashers, all of the Muslim haters, to rally behind this campaign that would carry out horrific crimes against people around the world and in this country and restore the eroding position of sections of people in the country, especially sections of white people in this country. And that's what you were getting from this guy. And you were getting that through the whole convention, where people talked about not the reality of police getting away with murder, but the need for people to get behind the police. And one applause line inside the Republican National Convention was to cite a murdering cop who had gotten exonerated. Mm. That brought out applause from this lynch mob that was being brought together. I mean, because literally, they referenced the cop who got exonerated who had been involved in the murder of Freddie Gray in Baltimore, and a standing ovation. This is what this is coming down to. And taking the crimes that this system already carries out against billions of people around the world and millions of people in this country, and vowing to take them to a whole other level. That's what was being put forward inside the convention. But outside the convention, there was a different scene. And like Joey was talking about, the numbers were not where they needed to be, but there was a different future being projected, especially by the Revolution Club and supporters of the Revolutionary Communist Party. And that was encapsulated in a couple of slogans. One was 1, 2, 3, 4, slavery, genocide, and war. 5, 6, 7, 8, America was never great. And actually getting into that and breaking that down. And then the other one that we used was, America was never great, we need to overthrow this system. And we broke that down to talking about why we needed a revolution to deal with these horrors, that these horrors were built into the fabric and framework of the system. The problem isn't just that police get away with murdering black people, or just that women are facing assaults on their right to choose to have an abortion, or just that immigrants are facing deportation. These aren't disconnected problems, but they are connected along with other horrors that this system brings down by all being rooted in the fabric and framework of this capitalist imperialist system. And nothing short of revolution could end them once and for all. And that the Revolutionary Communist Party is organizing right now for an actual revolution, and that we have a leader in Bob Avakian who's developed a strategic approach to how such a revolution could be made in a country like this, and a vision of the kind of world that could be brought into being. And that message was just ran through activity from the beginning through to the end of this convention.
Let me ask you a couple questions, Carl.
Go ahead.
I want to ask you, because on some things that you've mentioned, all right? One is that you mentioned the Revolution Club. And I think it's important for people who don't know about it to know what it is. If you're watching any of the coverage of what was happening in the streets in Cleveland this week, you saw the Revolution Club. And I wanted people to know what it was, because a lot of people look at it and say, damn, man, there's something going on there, but they don't know. And there was always all these references to the RevComs, including in these articles that appeared in the LA Times, on Yahoo, and different places. They talk about the RevComs. Tell people what the Revolution Clubs are and what are the RevComs.
The Revolution Club is an organization that has two basic principles. The first is humanity needs revolution and communism. And the second is
fight the power and transform the people for revolution. And anybody who is down with those two principles and wants to work collectively with like-minded people to carry them out is welcome to join the Revolution Club. And then we also welcome people who are just meeting the Revolution Club, just finding out about the revolution, to run with us, to take to the streets with us, to fight the power with us, and also to dig into the revolution with us, and to spread that to others that they know, even as they're learning about it. And the other thing I'll say about the Revolution Club is that it takes its leadership from the Revolutionary Communist Party, and especially from the works of Bob Avakian and the leadership that he's giving to the overall revolution in this country. And go to the website revcom.us and look at some of the videos, both the videos of the club in action at the Republican National Convention, but also videos of Revolution Club people around the country going out among the masses of people into the projects, into battles around police murder, into fighting around the attacks on immigrants, in the protests against the Nazi-like rallies that Donald Trump was having. And you then get a sense of what those principles mean and how they get taken into action. And then the other thing that people should check out is the message from the Central Committee of the Revolutionary Communist Party, Time to Get Organized for an Actual Revolution, because it has within it 6 points of attention. And these points of attention are things that the Revolution Club takes up and acts on. Through the different things that I've talked about, you get a sense of the outlook and the politics that guide the Revolution Club, but I think people really need to look at it in action and seeing that outlook and seeing those politics and the courage and determination that flow from it being carried into the streets, because there was really a lot of courageous activity by a lot of people. I mean, first off, it was pretty courageous for Joey to go out and to burn a flag in the midst of this situation, because there were pigs all over the place. It was just Pig City. And then on top of that, there were these reactionaries who were being whipped up. They were being fed that raw fascist meat inside the convention, and then being whipped up to go out in the streets and at least talk about it, if not act on it, right on the scene. And in the middle of that, you publicly say, at this time and this place, that red, white, and blue rag that represents all the horrors the system has brought down is going to be burned. And then some of those USA number one chauvinists, some of those Make America Great people again, they're not going to like that. Joey went out there anyway, and some revolutionaries went out there with him and carved out a space so that he could make that bold and revolutionary political statement, and stood in the face of attacks by, they got swarmed by pigs, and they stood and kept that space so that that rag could be burned.
Yeah, I was really, go ahead. Go ahead.
And got arrested and stood very well there. And then there was like some serendipity going on, because we marched down to the Hall of Injustice. We decided to march at 7:30 last night. And just as we turned the corner down at the Hall of Justice, the people who got released were coming down the steps. And the march surged to them. They surged to us. People were high-fiving and hugging. And then some of the people who got arrested started getting on the loudspeaker. Joey was just tearing away at what America represents, the crimes and the horrors that it brings down, and how that drove him to burn that flag, but that also the revolution and the leadership of that revolution inspired him to do it. And it was that kind of combination that you see in terms of the Rev Club. Some people who are determined to stand up and fight these horrors and have a sense of where that fight needs to go, all the way to revolution and to bringing a whole new world into being and spreading the work of the leader of this revolution, who's developed a vision of that new world and a strategic approach to make revolution and work to bring it into being in Bob Avakian. And it was just beautiful to see that in the streets, man.
Let me also say this. Well, first, let me say we're talking with Carl Dix, and it's the Michael Slate Show. And Carl is a representative of the Revolutionary Communist Party, and he's also a co-founder, along with Cornel West, of the Stop Mass Incarceration Network. And he's been in Cleveland all week long just raising up hell, okay, and much-needed raising up hell. Carl, you know, I wanted to say one thing. One, I want people to know that actually when you talk about Bob Avakian and his envisioning of the whole a whole new society, it's also important for people to know that, in fact, one of the things Joey was going to try to read from before he got just smashed by the police was he was going to read from the Constitution that Bob Avakian has written for the New Socialist Republic in North America. And this is an extremely important thing in terms of actually having that kind of a concrete vision. And it's really something that people will look at and can say, so this is what you're saying is going to happen after a revolution. Now, you've been talking a lot about a revolution. And I noticed that in the article around on RevCom this morning on the Revolution newspaper, part of RevCom, it says, cast away illusions, get organized for revolution, mind Trump, fangs bared. And I wanted you to talk about this because you don't just talk about revolution. You talk about an actual revolution. And I want people, a lot of times, I don't know if people get what's the importance of having that word actual in there.
Well, it's real important because, look, some people are talking about revolution today, but they don't mean what revolution actually comes down to. Because an actual revolution is one that overthrows this system, one that mobilizes millions of people who have gotten to the point where they no longer are willing to live this way another day. It mobilizes those millions to stand up, to rise up against the horror that the system brings down, and to meet and defeat the attempts at violent suppression that this system will definitely try to bring down on those revolutionary people. And those revolutionary people will then be led to build a whole different society. That's what an actual revolution is. And right now, when you talk about revolution, you got to make real clear it ain't the Bernie revolution, you know, because the Bernie revolution comes down to talking about a lot of the issues and the problems that are out there in society, like the income inequality, like the way in which the trade agreements that this government puts together are actually benefiting the very wealthy and actually eroding the position of many different sections of people in society, going at some of the problems that are out there, talking about mass incarceration and this kind of stuff, but then saying those problems can be at least lessened through working within the system and getting the right person into office. We'll go get a president who's going to do something about this, who's going to get a $15 minimum wage. Not working to end exploitation and oppression, but to see to it that the people on the bottom get a little bit more. It's going to talk about reducing mass incarceration. Of course, the current president has talked about it and not done anything of any substance about it. So we got to talk about where these problems actually come from. They aren't bad policies. That's not the problem. The problem isn't we got the wrong capitalist politicians in office, and if we just got other politicians who represented the capitalist system, then we'd be in much better position. No, we'd be in the same position, being viciously exploited and savagely oppressed by this American empire. An actual revolution gets rid of this system because that's the only way that we could end these horrors once and for all.
All right, Carl. Now, I want to ask you this because I think it's really important when you're talking about an actual revolution. And I want to emphasize again this point about the Constitution for the New Socialist Republic in North America, because when you're talking about an actual revolution, you are talking, very importantly, you're also talking and leading into, people are going to be asking, like, what are you going to get with this actual revolution? And that Constitution actually is something that has never been done before and is something that is really, one, both inspiring, but also really can ground people in what is it, what's unique about this revolution? And I wanted to ask you, like, when you see that, because it lays out a lot of what are all the rights, what's the role of the government, how, you know, all these kinds of things. But then it also, to a lot of people, I think it raises a question that like, okay, if it's like this, what's the relationship? You know, there's another question that comes up with, how do we get there from here? You're talking about an actual revolution. What's the relationship between a lot of the stuff that you do? You're fighting around police murder of black and brown people, all of this stuff. What's the link between that and actually the actual revolution and then moving on?
Okay, you raised a big question there.
Got about 6 minutes.
Look, here's the first thing. that Constitution does actually put some meat on the vision of a totally different society that is in transition to a classless communist world. And it starts from the perspective of day one after the revolution, how is the society going to be organized? What type of government will there be? How will it work? How will the economy be developed? What will that be like? What about education? What about art and culture? What about the rights of the people? What about public security? And see, in all of that, it breaks down what the situation will be, how people will be involved in carrying out that situation, but also how this is moving to get to the point where we no longer need a state structure over top of people guiding them, because we'll reach the point of a classless world, a world where the exploitation and oppression is completely done away with. And the heart of this is that people will have the right to act to end exploitation and oppression, which is something you don't have the right to do in this society at best. And these are rights that disappear real quick. At best, you have the right to take action to try to minimize the oppression, try to ease the exploitation in this society. But even as you try to carry that out, you can find your ability to do that disappearing on you. You find that when you're out protesting police brutality and get vamped on by the police and suffer mass arrests for standing up around that. You find that when you go out to make a political statement like Joey Johnson did, burning the American flag, and you get arrested and the people who are out there with you get arrested. Those rights, because we've been hearing a whole lot of, well, you got the freedom to do these kinds of protests. That's why America's so great. Well, actually, it ain't so great, because you got freedom of speech as long as you don't say too much. So that's the thing about this freedom. It does not exist. But under the revolutionary society, people will have the right to act to end exploitation and oppression. And the relationship, and I should say the Constitution was written by Bob Avakian, and it encapsulates his vision of the new world that this revolution could bring into being. And in terms of the relationship between organizing for an actual revolution and fighting against these horrors, the two are very closely connected. Because look, people have to stand up. People have to fight against these horrors. If we continue to accept them, we will be beaten down so far that nothing could be done about this system. So we are out there fighting. We're calling on everybody to get out there and fight. But as we fight, we are also bringing out to people that revolution is what's needed. That's the only way to end these horrors. And that we have the leadership for that revolution in Bob Avakian. We've got the strategic approach, and we are organizing right now for an actual revolution. And that organizing for an actual revolution and tying the resistance to that actually makes the resistance more powerful, because it doesn't get sucked back into the system the way that all too often resistance movements end up going. They end up going for changes within the system, which fundamentally mean that nothing gets fundamentally changed.
Mm-hmm. All right, Carl, I want to ask you one quick question. You going to be in Philadelphia?
Yeah, I'm going to be in Philadelphia. Joey convinced me to come with him. And people
right.
should go to the website, revcom.us. We report it every day on the Republican National Convention, and we're going to do the same thing on the Democratic National Convention. You should really be there with us. But if you can't make it there, follow the convention at revcom.us.
All right, Carl, and hopefully we'll talk to you guys again next week.
Okay.
All right? All right, thanks a lot, man. All right, take care now. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and I'm Michael Slate, and I've just been talking with Carl Dix from the Revolutionary Communist Party. All right, shortly after I spoke with Carl Dix and Joey Johnson, I was informed that they've issued a challenge to any fascist meathead that wants to come out and debate them around anything they've raised about the character of this convention, and in particular about the character of this country and what the world needs right now. So here's the challenge issued by Joey Johnson and Carl Dix.
Look, we just watched Donald Trump's acceptance speech at the Republican National Convention. It was like a mixture of Adolf Hitler and Duck Dynasty. come on, this is the best that you guys can come up with? This is what your system is putting forward to be commander-in-chief of the empire? This is some weak shit. We ready to issue a challenge to all of the Republican gargoyles, the fascist baboons, the lynch mob getting worked up. We can take on your shit. We got the truth on this.
I hear my man Carl Dix talking about we're ready in any public forum to take on any of these fascist fools, these fascist chimpanzees, these fascist baboons who are running around upholding this America First bullshit because this is harmful poison. It's toxic to the people of the world. And we'll call them out and we'll debate them anywhere in a public square, anywhere in a major forum, a media forum in this country. Be there or be square or be cowardly and fearless like you are.
All right, welcome back. That was the challenge from Joey Johnson and Carl Dix to all the fascist Trump followers and all the other fascists and the Democratic fascists who want to argue about the sanctity and the purity of U.S. imperialism. And if by chance anyone stumbled onto the show and figures now that they want to answer that challenge, go to revcom.us, and I'm sure you'll be able to find a way to answer the challenge directly right there. And we're going to take a quick musical break and be right back with a very special segment, so stay tuned.
Zwei, drei, Sphere.
Strange things are happening, Lord, I don't know what to do. My friends say it's in my head, I say it's deja vu. It's all too familiar, been down this road before. I believe it was in Germany, just before the war.
All right. If that doesn't send chills up your back, I don't know what will. All right. And this is Sunny Meadows. Okay, Sunny Meadows with Just Like Germany Before the War. All right, I'm going to do something now that I rarely ever do, and that is I'm going to read something that I found the other night, and I was really moved by it because I think it speaks to all the most important questions we're faced with in the world today, in this country and in the world today. And it's called Yes, We Do Need a Revolution, Overthrowing This System. Don't Let Bernie Take You Back Into It. If you are into Bernie Sanders, you were right to reject Hillary Clinton and find her despicable. You aspired to something different. But now Bernie wants to lead you back into the fold, back into what you once swore you'd never go along with. A word. Now is not the time to give up on this, your aspirations with broken hearts, to hold your nose while voting for Hillary. Precisely the opposite. Now is the time to really follow through on your convictions. Now is the time to get radically different and scientific, to dig into the cause of the problems and the horrors that drove you to Bernie, and into the solution as well. Ask yourself, what is the nature of this system that gives rise to the howling inequalities, not only within this country, but to an almost unimaginably greater degree worldwide? Is it just controlled by the greedy corporations, or is there something deeper in the very framework and rules of how things work? What is the history of this country, interwoven since its founding with the slavery and continuing oppression of black people, and how does that play out today? Is America a source for good in the world, or is it in fact the principal source of the world's horrors, of imperialist wars, unprecedented violence and torture, and oppressive domination of entire nations? Why do immigrants come here? Who and what drives them on their deadly journeys? Why are women so pervasively degraded and abused in this society and in this world? Could you really solve the rapidly developing ecological catastrophe within the framework of this economic and political system? Let's also ask this. What will it take to get beyond all this? Does the road out lie in rallying big crowds of disaffected people within this system's workings and choices and ultimately funneling people back into what they started out rejecting? Does it lie with a third party again within this system? Is it a social movement that may rattle some chains of this system only to be suppressed or swallowed up in its entrails? Or is what humanity requires a real solution that shatters those chains? What, for that matter, is genuine socialism? Is it a basket of Scandinavian-style social reforms based on a position high in the imperialist food chain? Or is it a path toward truly uprooting all forms of oppression and exploitation and getting to a world fit for all 7 billion on our planet? A hard path, yes, one with challenges and sacrifices, but one that is actually capable of birthing a whole new world. There are answers to all these questions, but this requires science, a method for understanding the world as it actually is and how it can change. And it requires leadership based on this science. Without this, even the most heroic struggles remain confined and contained within the system that is the source of these horrors, and the nightmare continues. That is what makes Babavakian, BA, so important. BA has developed a scientific understanding and approach to make the kind of revolution that can emancipate humanity. He has learned deeply from previous revolutions as well as from many different spheres. He has forged a strategy for how a revolution could be prepared for and won, as well as a concrete vision for the new society that is on the road to real liberation. At the same time, he has kept his connection to and acted as a true champion of the oppressed, from those who catch the hardest hell in this country's ghettos and barrios to the majority of the 7 billion around the world. He has never given up, and today he leads a party which is actively preparing for a real revolution, one aimed not at reforming, but overthrowing this system. That is real leadership, leadership that demands to be engaged and examined. At the same time, there are real outrages that must be fought right now and that people are fighting right now. Let's join together in both dimensions, fighting to stop the madness and, as we do, digging into what it will take to fundamentally and finally get beyond this insanity. And let's do this now, at both conventions. Leave Bernie behind. Get ready for and get into the real revolution. Get radical, get scientific, get into BA. Fight the power and transform the people for revolution. That was a statement that you can find on revcom.us. And I think it's very important to be reading that to people today for people to consider, to think about, because those are the questions that are posed before us. As I listened to Bernie Sanders' speech at the convention, when he called on all those people who were there supporting him, and he called on them and argued with them, told them that they should go out there and get behind Hillary Clinton, get behind Hillary, the war criminal Clinton. And he posed that as an acceptable alternative to what's going on in this world. This is not acceptable. So anybody that wants to write to me about that, about anything I read here today, you can do so at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. And I look forward to hearing your thoughts on that.
A meanness swept the land, stealing our hearts and the hands of time, taking us back in history to a place on the darker side, where we saluted the flags of fear and the voice of ignorance roared. Taking us back to Germany just before the war. The balance of power shifted when the people cast their vote. How we're lining up the victims, the villains, and the scapegoats. And we're all singing hallelujah. Death penalty's been restored. Just like in Germany, just before.
Welcome back. That was a little bit more from Sunny Meadows and Just Like Germany Before the War. Bone chilling, eh? All right, right now I'm going to rerun something I ran last week. And it's a segment from a dialogue between Babavakian and Cornel West. And I wanted to run this because I think it really speaks to some of the major things that we're confronting today. All right, the question that I know a lot of people, a lot of my friends are asking me, and they're asking themselves, is there value to voting? Can voting stop fascism? Now, again, this is an excerpt from the dialogue called Revolution and Religion, The Fight for Emancipation and the Role of Religion. It's a dialogue between Cornel West and Babavakian. And it's available at revcom.us if you want to hear the whole thing. But check this out, because I think it's a very, very important perspective that you need to chew on and think about today especially, and following it all the way out in your thinking and in your actions.
Someone asks, in response to voting, is there no value in working to abolish a system while participating to minimize the immediate damage it does at the same time? And then someone else asked, if we avoid voting because no candidate represents the left, how can we also avoid enabling the rise of the worst of the right?
Now, I think Brother Bacon said it well when he said he's not against fighting for the right to vote. And under certain circumstances, voting might make a difference. He just doesn't want to trot out the illusion that somehow we can vote our way through fundamental social change. I think it was Emma Goldman who used to say, if you could vote, if voting would lead toward fundamental transformation, it would be illegal. So we're not against reform. We fight for reform. We're not seduced by the illusions of reform. That's all. Is that a characterization of what you were talking about?
Yeah, but I think there's another, yes, but I also think there's another point here, which is the logic of the vote of voting forgets one very basic fact, that in any kind of profound social change that's come about, it didn't come about by people playing by the rules and going along with the way things are. It went by people stepping outside of the way things are and refusing to go along with the rules. If you think about, for example, even some of the gains of the civil rights movement, the way things were in the South was, it wasn't just something people, white people didn't want, that black people could go to a restaurant. It was against the law.
That's right.
The law said that you had to have segregation. So if you were gonna change that, you couldn't say, we have to abide by the law. You have to say, this law is an unjust law. We have to step outside and oppose that. And if you think about any kind of basic change that's been brought about, it's always happened. See, people say, for example, now I gotta call his name, Michael Eric Dyson. In the last presidential election said, if you don't vote, then you aren't in the game. The championship is the San Antonio Spurs and the Miami Heat. If you don't support one of those two teams, then you don't have it. You're not involved. You don't have a dog in the fight. The problem is, if the choices that they're giving us are the only way you can play the game, then that ought to tell us that we don't need to be playing this game. See, that's the first thing. And what we need to do, like people have always done whenever they've changed anything in any kind of fundamental way, is to step outside of the rules. Let's go back to right now, what's hanging in the air, the Michael Brown thing. How many times have you heard over and over again, we have to respect the process. We have to let the system play out. We have to let the system work. But this is the system working. The assassination of Michael Brown and so many others, thousands of others, that is the system working. And, look, how many times going back, say, 50, 60, 70 years, were black people lynched in the South? And thousands of times. And how many times was any white person ever convicted of murdering them in that way? Now, you can come forward to the present time. People always say, the police have such a dangerous job. Look, what about all the police that are killed by black people? Well, what about them? First of all, you can't hardly find any. You go and take the statistics for the number of police that have been killed over the last 30 years and put it up against the number of black youth and brown youth that have been killed by the police, and one of them will be like this and the other one will be like that. And then here's the other thing. If somebody black or brown does kill somebody in the police, how long are they gonna live? And if they live, how long is a grand jury gonna take, if it even goes to the grand jury, to indict them for murder? Take the list of the number of police that have ever been indicted and tried, let alone convicted, for killing one of these youth, and put it up against the number of youth who've been indicted and convicted and either executed or sent to life in prison for the few times that they have actually killed the police. So this is the setup you're dealing with, and this goes back to elections. The problem with the elections is that the terms are always set by the powers that be, by the system itself, in a way that always makes the choices get worse and worse. So that what yesterday was something that you regarded as an outrage, tomorrow that becomes a compromise position, and the day after that it becomes the best thing you can hope for under this system and by voting. And this is what's wrong with the whole thing of voting. We have to go out and change the terms, not try to find the best we can within the terms.
I think this raises an issue which in some ways is the elephant in the room now, which is very much like the Sinclair Lewis novel. You said what? Oh, you can't hear? What? I can't hear. Oh, hit him where it hit. Well, the economic boycott that we called for in New York just 2 weeks ago, to end stop and frisk and to have the resignation of Bratton. Yeah, economic boycott, yes. But what I was talking about was this, though. Whoever raised their voice like that, it sounds good. I think in beyond that, we have to come to terms with the fact that there is a real possibility that America could go outright fascist. We got to come to terms with that. And what that means is that when you have politicians who are bought off by big money, bought off by big banks, bought off by big corporations, so that the government itself is completely subsumed under the power of Wall Street and big corporations. And those voices that are raised to try to bring critique to bear are either demonized, character assassination, or literal assassination, America is then very much on the road to fascism. And, well, no. The very fact that we're having this dialogue here is in some sense a possibility of some people speaking their minds. I'm talking about when just to raise your very voice, my dear sister, means you shut down like a dog. We can call it soft fascism versus hard fascism. Okay. So by raising voices, by still having possibility of social movements, even though it's penetrated by the FBI, that's soft fascism, then you got thick fascism. But I don't want to play with the word fascism because many of us have had to deal with much more harder fascism where we couldn't raise our voices at all. You see? But I'm just saying that because when you look at the three dominant tendencies of neoliberal capitalism, which is financialized, privatized, and militarized, and the financializing with wealth at the top, you're privatizing public education, public life, public prisons across the board, and then you militarize them, beginning with the schools and the airports, let alone the bombs in 890 military units around the world with a ship in every ocean. That is the American empire at the moment. At the moment. And to the degree to which the very possibilities of public spaces where certain voices, let alone certain movements, can still be enacted. Because believe me, under fascism, the Revolutionary Communist Party would not exist at all.
Well,
we
wouldn't be here, sitting here.
Well, we would be underground and in a serious way. Now, it might be the case that there's a whole lot of folks underground. We would, but I mean, the point is that I'm just talking about that's one of the elephants in the room in regard to what the challenges are.
Well, I agree. And I think the point, once again, is that there's only one way that's going to be prevented, and that's the same way that everything else we're talking about is going to happen. It's people rising up and refusing to go along with it and winning more and more people. Look, we have to go, when we talk about transforming the people, we're talking about, it's not some mystical process. We're talking about transforming the thinking of people, large numbers of people, how people understand the reality out here, what their values are based on that, how they see going about things in the world, what they think is important, how they see the possibility of living a different way, and how they see going about fighting for that. But this is the key thing we have to do. We can't just have a good dialogue, and believe me, I'm enjoying it very much. And it's very important, and we need to do a lot more of this. You and me need to do more of this, and other people need to do more of this. We need to be, our agreements, our disagreements, we need to be wrestling with them. Right. We need to find the unity as broadly as we can, and we need to keep talking about and arguing about our disagreements in a principled and lofty way. But at the same time, we can't just come to a thing and feel good for ourselves. This is not about us. This is not about the people here just unto ourselves.
That's right.
This is about what kind of world we're going to have and what we're really willing to do to actually fight to bring that world into being and to live in a way that's consistent with that and to bring into being a world that we can give to our children and their children that's much different and much better than this world. So we have to go out of here. That's why I said, and I was very serious. I'm not playing here. If they don't bring down an indictment against the murderer of Michael Brown, that is a test for all of us, and that is a test for this society and the people in it. What kind of society are we going to live in? What kind? It's not the only one. There are many tests, but it's one right in front of us right now.
Okay.
And if we're going to prevent, look, if the rulers of this country think that they have to throw off their democratic mask and go to what you're calling thick fascism, go to outright dictatorial rule without any pretense of allowing for the will of the people and rights and protests and so on. If they come to a consensus, maybe through a lot of struggle in their own ranks, but if they come to a consensus that that's what they need, they're going to move in that way, and nothing will stop them but us. And the millions and millions of people who are like us or who are not like us but need to be one to understand the world the way that we're coming to understand it.
Oh, that's real. That's real.
All right, once again, that was an excerpt from a dialogue between Bob Avakian and Cornel West, and it was called Is There Value to Voting? Can Voting Stop Fascism? And you can find the entire dialogue at revcom.us, and I'm sure once you've heard that, I'm sure you're going to want to hear a whole lot more, so go there and check it out. Well, that brings us to the end of yet another show, and it's been a hell of a show. I've really enjoyed bringing it to you, and I hope you got a lot out of it. I want to thank all of my guests today, Joey Johnson, Carl Dix. I want to thank Cornel West and Bob Avakian for doing all that they've done in relation to all this, and I want to thank each and every one of you for tuning in. I want to thank my assistant producer, Henry Carson, my production assistants, Jeff Pryor and Matt Kwiklinski. If you want to write to me, you can at mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. Once again, that's mslate@themichaelslateshow.com. We're going to go out now with Revolution from the Pretenders. Talk to you again next week.
Cats like me and you have got lost. But they adhere to laws outside the laws as they down.